Hello, everyone, and welcome to another one. Well, actually, our first Grand Tour preview, and this is, of course, of the Giro d'Italia 2024. And as always, I'm joined by Patrick Blake of Andrew Cycling, and today we're going to go through the route, the favorites, the outsiders, and even the sprinters. This is going to hopefully be an exciting edition of the Giro. We never really know what's going to happen, but Patrick, great to have you here. And yeah, the Giro d'Italia, where does that kind of rank for you in terms of races and the past few memorable editions as well?
I think the Giro is so exciting because it is the first Grand Tour. Obviously, I think a lot of people will say the Tour de France is the best Grand Tour. I do kind of agree with them there, but there's something about the fact that it's been so long since we've all seen a Grand Tour, you know, the last one being the Vuelta and Jumbo-Visma getting their 1-2-3. It feels like a lifetime ago that we had that sort of racing. So it's just like this really, and it feels like we've been starved of it, and it's great to see. And I love the Maya Rosa. I mean, I'm even wearing a pink jumper today in homage to that. I mean, yeah, we've had some fantastic victors. I mean, Roglic just about beating Geraint Thomas last year, but yeah, Egan Bernal's victory in the past as well. I think that, you know, it always throws up some surprises because it's also sometimes prone to some inclement weather at this time of year, so it can throw up some real surprises in that way as well.
I mean, I'm still heartbroken from Joaquin Rodriguez not winning the Giro d'Italia when Ryder Heyerdahl took it on that edition, so I'm still reeling from that. Yeah, Contador as well, remember him getting dropped, the famous Tom Dumoulin incident. But I mean, I feel like the Giro hasn't been that daring in the last few years. It normally always came with something spicy, but like even starting outside of Europe, but right now it's, yeah, what's the gold dust here? I mean, Wout van Aert was due to start, but obviously that's out of their control.
Yeah, I mean, I guess a certain Pogacar is the gold dust in this, but yeah, it is a shame that Wout's not going to be here. I think he would have been a big candidate for a lot of these stages and was really going to provide a bit of a kind of intriguing person to be able to compete in such a variety of terrain. So it is a shame that Wout's not going to be here, but I'm sure that somebody else will put on a show. They have to.
Well, we might as well go into the route, and don't worry, Patrick's not going to be completely on his own for this route analysis of 21 stages. But yeah, Patrick, what does the first week look like for the Grand Tours?
We start off with a very tough opening two stages. It's very unlike kind of like a normal Grand Tour where you might see a couple of sprints. We go from Banalia Real to Torino, which takes in some pretty serious climbing, including the Colle della Maddalena. And there's also like a tiny climb, but it's up to San Vito, which it was added in late, but it's the perfect little launch pad for Pogacar, basically. Then we go into stage two from San Francisco al Campo to Sartoria di Opora. 150 kilometers, so not massively long, but the final climb being 11.8 kilometers at 6.1%, with a 4 kilometer section in there that's 9%. So again, another GC day. But then we move into stage three, which does look to be for the sprinters from Novara to Fossano, 165 kilometers, but a couple of little 1 to 2 kilometer climbs in there at 4% could certainly weed out some of the pure sprinters. Stage four, 187 kilometers from Aki Telme to Andorra. I don't think it's not like the actual Andorra. It's just a town in Italy. It's at 4 meters of elevation, not like thousands of meters. It does look like another sprint. There is a climb in the middle, the Colle del Melagno, but it should be for the sprinters. But again, a little climb at the end seems to be something that the Giro organisers are loving this year. It's just a tiny little 1 to 2 kilometre climb at 4% to kind of really test some of the sprinters. Stage 5 from Genova to Lucca, 176 kilometres. Again, another fairly straightforward sprint stage. Then we move into stage 6, the gravel stage from Viareggio to Lapolano Telme, 177 kilometres. And yeah, two big gravel sectors on here, up and down all day. It's got all the trademarks of a one-day race, basically. And I think that could definitely be one where the GC riders are going to be on edge, like, all day, pretty much. And then stage 7, we've got the TT, which includes a disgusting 1.3-kilometre 10% climb, the Casaglia climb. It's a 37.2 kilometer TT, but it's got a really testing finale. So it's going to be a crossover between TT specialists versus GC riders there as to who's going to win. And then we've got stage 8, which goes from Spoleto to Plateau di Tivo, Plateau de Tivo being 14.7 kilometers at 7%. Some other climbs throughout the day, so it could be a GC day, but it could maybe be a breakaway day, depending on how the GC gaps are after that TT the day before. And then we round out the first week, stage 9 from Avezzano to Naples, 206 kilometers. And this is what we earmarked in a previous video as sort of the Biniam Gamay stage. It's got four climbs in that, although only one categorized inside the final 30 kilometers. Neither of them being particularly steep, kind of anywhere between 4 to 6%, but it's certainly going to not be one for the pure sprinters. It's going to be one for the punchers or the sprinters who can climb a little bit. So Scott, in that first week, I think there's a lot of, is it, first of all, it's a 9-stage first week. It's a mixed bag, GC in there, sprints as well, and the gravel stage, and a TT. It's everything.
No, I think it's an exciting first week. It's not just, yeah, there's a bit of everything, but we've spoken about the gravel stage. We would have wanted a lot more, to be honest, but this could be where the Giro is, in a way, won.
Yeah, I do think that a Pogačar on like good form, which we're expecting he is going to be, you know, the end of this week, he could be 3 minutes up on GC, something like that. I think there's just going to be a series of opportunities here for him to take anywhere between 30 seconds to a minute. I'm especially looking at that gravel stage. There's a little berg at the end there where he could certainly break away with just 5 kilometers to go and drop a lot of the GC rivals. So it's going to be, yeah, quite interesting. But I do agree with you that I would have liked to see a little bit more gravel, because there is only 2 sectors in there. So, well, I don't know, maybe they were worried about there being too much and people being a little bit like, oh, there's too much gravel and it's ruining the race, and it's, you know, luck is playing too much of a factor in deciding the GC, which I also understand.
Right, yeah. What does week 2 look like at the Giro this year?
Firstly, from Pompeii to the Cassano Mutli, 141 kilometers, but the final climb being 18 kilometers at 5.6%. However, some people may call this a fake muse climb or whatever it is, where there's a series of steps in here, so there's a couple of downhills in there as well. So it's not really 5.6%. There's steeper sections, and then there's some downhill sections which kind of level things out. But I don't really know how that one could go. Given the length of the climb, I expect it'll be a GC day. Stage 11 looks like another sprint day from Faiuano di Belforte to Franciavilla al Mare. 203 kilometers, but looks like a fairly nailed-on sprint day. Stage 12 from Martinescuro to Fano. Lots of Category 4 climbs in here, up and down all day. There's no way some team's going to try and work all day to bring this all back together. There seems to be very little flat riding in the last half of this whole stage, so I expect that to go to the breakaway. Stage 13... I mean, this is about as nailed on as a sprint day as you're going to get. 179 kilometers from Riccione to Cento. Stage 14 is the second and final TT of the race. It is 31 kilometers long, pretty flat, although a couple of tiny little kind of bumps in there. But the speed these guys are going at, they'll probably just kind of flatten them out and just charge straight through them. But yeah, 31 kilometers, it does take the overall number of TT kilometers in this race to like 70 odd kilometers. So there's quite a lot of time trialing in this race. And then we also have in stage 15, 222 kilometers from Manabella Delgada to Livingo. This is one of the biggest stages, Scott, because 222 kilometers is long in its own right, but finishing up a mountain which is nearing 2,400 meters with the Mortirolo in here as well. People may argue this could be the queen stage, considering how the Passo della Stelvio has been used in this race, which has been rather disgusting, but we'll get onto that in a minute. Yeah, this is a really tricky stage, and I think this is going to be a big, big day for GC. And that rounds out the second week of racing, so I expect there to be fireworks on that stage 15. What do you make about second week, Scott? I think we're going to see some more GC action though, mainly.
I must be honest, I didn't actually realize that the Mortirolo was in the race, because it's been used like that. But the combination of having that stage with the time trial is quite interesting, how the teams are going to play that. And maybe you could see someone absolutely blow up on that stage 15. Like you said, the length and the vicious climb, the Mortirolo, many people say, or many pros say, that the worst climb in professional cycling.
It looks like an absolute brute of a stage. with the time trial before then, you're going to see climbers who are going to be down on GC. At that point, they're going to have lost a couple of minutes, likely. So they're going to be looking to try and make it up here. And, you know, it's worth noting the final climb to Livingo isn't especially steep. It's kind of split into two climbs, which is the Passo di Poscagno, which is 15 kilometers at 6%. And then the actual final climb is only 4.7 kilometers at 7%. So there's not like double digit gradients here. It's just going to be a real kind of like wearing down process throughout the day. Lots of climbing, lots of energy expended. And if it's bad weather as well, you know, if it's a little bit cold, hopefully it's not enough to get the stage cancelled. But if it's a little bit cold, you're going to see bodies everywhere.
You jinxed it now. No, it's, yeah, I think it's potentially one of the most exciting stages of the whole race. But I mean, that aside, final week, what does that look for the riders with the very interesting penultimate stage as well?
So stage 16, we go from Livigno, which is where we finished the previous stage, and we go to the Santa Cristina Bargardena, which is 202 kilometers, and it also includes the Passo della Stelvio, 19.6 kilometers at 7.4% to 2,760 meters. However, it is used 30 kilometers into the stage, and then once the Stelvio is crested, it's about 100 kilometers to the next climb. So you're not going to see any GC action that's going to really amount to anything. They're just going to, it'll just be a completely futile attempt, pretty much. It's a very criminal use of the Stelvio. So we're just going to move on from that and go on to stage 17, which is from Selva di Bargardena to Passo Bronson. This is 154 kilometers, so it's not massively long, but it does include five categorized climbs in here. This is a very big day as well. It's going to be intense because it's a little bit shorter, but the amount of climbing in here is hard to tell whether this might be a breakaway day or a GC day. I think it kind of straddles the line between the two. It depends just on the GC situation, and maybe if somebody's feeling good, they might accept their team to work on the front. Stage 18, we've got the Fiera di Primello to Padovova, which is 166 kilometers, just a pretty standard sprint day inside the final week. However, some of these sprint stages do go to the breakaway. Think back to Dries de Bont when he won a few years ago. Sometimes the breakaway can have their day late on. Stage 19 from Mortegliano to Sappadada, and this is 164 kilometers and looks really like another breakaway day to me. Probably not enough climbing in here, or the climbing just isn't quite suited towards, you know, a big GC raid. But you might see somebody try and launch an attack if they're a little bit desperate, but they might want to save their legs for stage 20, which is from Alpago to Bassano del Grappa, taken in two ascents of the Monte Grappa, which is 18.2 kilometers at 8%. That's some eye-watering statistic. I can just imagine trying to ride up that. Oh god, it would just be awful. An 8% average for a few kilometers is bad enough. 18.2 kilometers, and you have to do it twice. I mean, you're pretty much descending down to the line. So it's going to favor if you're a good descender as well. You know, if you're gapped by a minute, you could definitely try and make that back up. So this is the big finale to the Giro d'Italia, basically, because stage 21 is 127 kilometers around Rome. Just nice, easy laps where there'll probably just be a sprint, I guess, because that's what happens on these final stages. What do you make of that whole week, Scott? There's just a lot. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, completely. I think the first week combined with that stage 15 and the time trial combined with this final week with that Monte Grappa stage, the route is great. There's nothing wrong, well, the gravel stage. But other than that, I think it's a really good route. And you said there was going to be a sprint in Rome. Will there be any sprinters left? That's the question.
Might be. Only the ones who are interested in Ciclamino will probably be bothered enough to try and drag their corpses, because that's what they'll be at that point over the Monte Grappa. Can you imagine being a sprinter and having to face that? You would just, be awful.
But anyways, we might as well go into favourites. We've talked enough about the route. Where best to start with in the poster boy of this year's Giro d'Italia, which is Tadej Pogačar. Obviously, we spoke about him in quite in-depth in another video, so if you missed that, you can click the caption above. But yeah, Patrick, we've said everything we had to say about this. He's the overwhelming favorite. He's won Vuelta a Catalunya, Sarà Bianchi, we know all this, and even Liège, Paston Liège, and a great team. But there wasn't, the list wasn't confirmed in terms of the team list when we did the video. So has his team changed?
No, his team has remained the same as the last video that we did.
No Juan Ayuso, no Brandon McNulty, no Marc Soler, like you said them to get.
No, they didn't listen to me, Scott. It's like I said last time, it is the team which I think is just treading the line of just good enough to secure the Pogačar victory, but it's going to be quite reliant upon Pogačar just doing Pogačar things and probably just dropping everyone by himself, because I don't think there's the greatest mountain support here. I mean, people have been balking up Novak. I agree, you know, that's a good card to be playing, but I think you're really lacking that. I mean, maybe like Micah is going to have to really step up in my eyes. You need that big high mountain support, because that's where Pogačar is. You know, if he is going to crack anywhere, it's going to be in the high mountains. And, you know, especially like that stage 15, the length of it up to Libigno, I think that one, and altitude as well, you know, that's got the kind of hallmarks of places where Pogačar's cracked in the past. So I think UAE Team Emirates, I think the team's fine. Pogačar's the overwhelming favourite. The course certainly could get multiple victories. I mean, I on the Echelon Cycling podcast, I said six. I think that's how many he's going to be getting in this race. So he's the overwhelming favourite. What else can you say?
I mean, if he did get six, that's a higher batting average than he has at the Tour de France so far. So that would be one for six. I think we've said everything. He's probably, might take multiple jerseys. He can't take the youth classification, so that's something. How is he going to win it, though? How are they going to play at UAE? Like you said, they haven't got the strongest team, and there are some quite strong squads in here.
Ideally, they take the pink jersey in the first week, and, you know, Pogačar takes minutes on everybody in that first week, and then probably just play defensive at that point for the rest of the race. Just, you know, let breakaways go as, you know, as freely as they can. Don't let anybody of two, like, who's too close in GC into that, but just leave it to like the other people who are fighting for the podium to pace. You know, leave it to Ineos or AG2R or Bahrain or whoever. You know, leave it to them to do the work. So long as there's nobody in the break who's threatening your GC position, I'd say just let them go. Put a lot of work in that first week and then try and just play it very passive from that point onwards, which I know isn't particularly exciting or maybe counterintuitive to how Pogačar rides and how we've seen him riding, but I think that's the smart move, especially since they've probably got an eye on the Tour de France as well.
Yeah, the double. Yeah, maybe even triple crown. Who knows what the limit is. But yeah, we might as well speak about the team that could have won it last year. Ineos Grenadiers, they're coming with the returning second place finisher of Geraint Thomas, the returning fifth place finisher of Thierren Arendsman, Tobias Foss, who's finished in the top 10 before, Philippe Bogana, as we all know, won stages and won the Malia Rossa before in the Giro d'Italia. Narváez equally has won a stage. Magnus Sheffield, who I'm pretty sure you're going to mention, debut at the Grand Tour, and the two Swift cousins of Ben and Connor. And I mean, I think it's a pretty strong team, this, from Ineos Grenadiers. I mean, it's a bit of a mix, because you could say that Ben Swift's sprinting days are over and he's more in that, yeah, he's a good climber as well. So maybe it is quite a good GC squad of old by Ineos / Sky.
They have a similar problem to UAE Team Emirates, I think, in that their mountain support, yes, you might see some good climbing performances.
What? You don't like Arendsman, Foss? Ah, okay, that's it.
Yeah, then that's it.
Yeah, there's no extra Colombian or something like that.
Yeah, like, we've seen good climbing performances in the past from Narváez, and, you know, Swift has done some good ones in the past, and Sheffield climbs all right, but he's on debut, but I don't see him being like a high mountain support. And if Ineos are, let's say, you know, fighting for second place against a lot of other people, you know, they're going to need to be able to put the squeeze on some of these climbs, and, you know, they're very much reliant upon Arendsman and Foss being there, and you don't know what can happen in a Grand Tour. They can get ill or a crash, or they just don't feel good. And I just think that this team would be better if it had one more climber in there, because it seems just very ruler focused. Like, Ganna's worth two rulers, so you don't really need like both Swifts, as Sheffield, Narváez and Ganna. That's basically like having six rulers with Ganna in there. It just seems a little bit overkill on the flat, in my opinion. So I'd maybe like to see another climber, but saying that, they're still, you know, Garrett Thomas, like you say, he almost won it last year. So maybe we're just going to try to do the same. Just be like, well, you know, just swap one Slovenian for another. And, you know, we're just going to try and play our consistent game. And hopefully Pogacar has a bad day. I reckon that's Ineos's game plan for this.
No, I think you're very, very right there. I almost said, let's go to UAE, but we've already done UAE. In terms of other teams to look at, you mentioned, I mean, is Ben O'Connor, is that the other big,
yeah.
Well, or we're going to go Romain Bardet, but Romain Bardet also has, yeah, he's sharing that team. So that's going to be a bit of a thorn for him.
Mm.
But yeah, okay, go on then. Ben O'Connor is fourth place in the tour that we're still living on.
Yeah, I mean, O'Connor backed up by the Panepentlers and Alex Baudin, Larry Warbas, Van Vlaam, Planchon, Damien Touzé. I just think that combination of O'Connor and the Panepentlers looked really good in Tour of the Alps. You know, you could, you know, say, well, you know, that's like his only mountain support, and that's very similar to what we saw with all my complaints about Ineos and UAE, and, you know, it's pretty fair, is that I'd say that, you know, they're very reliant upon those Panepentlers being there and being able to provide the pressure on, you know, like a Garrett Thomas or whoever else is fighting for that podium place so that O'Connor can try and nab a victory. I mean, the last time O'Connor did, like, finished a Grand Tour and, you know, got a GC result was the 2022 of Vuelta, where he finished in eighth place. But I'd say that the GC field isn't massively strong in this race, and O'Connor's definitely got a good shot based upon how he looked at Tour of the Alps of being a podium contender.
Yeah, it is quite strange seeing a lot of teams not completely committing to their GC rider, and UAE, to some extent, not committing completely to Pogacar with Molano in there. But yeah, we might as well. Another team that is in that situation of not committing, DSM, Vermeulen, PostNL, they have their two biggest cards in terms of, well, the biggest riders on their payroll in terms of Romain Bardet and Fabio Jakobsen, and then the squad kind of built around the two of them. Yeah, I know we were going to talk about sprinters separate, but they're forcing us to talk about both of them here. So, yeah, how do you think DSM are going to play this with the two roles?
I think it's firstly very smart of them to put a lot of effort into the Giro, you know, when maybe a lot of people were focusing on the Tour, you know, put all their eggs in this basket. But yeah, Bardet, I mean, second at Liège, he was good at Tour of the Alps. I just never quite know what to expect from Bardet nowadays, because he talked, you know, a couple of years ago about focusing on stages and how he was like fed up with GC. I definitely remember him saying that, but then he seems to have kind of reverted back, and I just don't know what kind of Bardet we're going to get here. I would expect that given the GC field, he would have a good shot of finishing inside the top five in GC here, which I presume he'd be very happy with. I mean, he's got some mountain support with Chris Hamilton, Kevin Vermaeke, and of course Max Poole is coming to this race. So, you know, you got, you know, Max Poole is actually the GC leader for DSM here. Bardet is actually playing in Domestique, in case you didn't know, Scott. I mean, on the other hand, you got Jakobsen, where, I mean, DSM's team here only has seven people on there. So I'm going to presume they're going to add another rouleur, because at the moment, his lead out trainer is light. He's got Julius Vandenberg. The marker, I guess, is going to thread the line between helping both leaders. Then you got Tobias Lund Andersen, got it right this time, and then Jakobsen. I just think that seems a little bit light from a sprinting capacity. Maybe they are just hedging their bets and kind of trying to play both fields.
I mean, it seems silly to go back to DSM for the sprinting now, so we might as well just ram into this part now. But yeah, the Tour of Turkey, where Jakobsen wins, and then Tobias Lund Andresen, friend of the channel, and if you want to see him absolutely make me destroyed in a sprint, you can check out the link of that as well, because he is rapid. But yeah, the combination of those two, we all know that Jakobsen can't climb a speed bump, but yeah, do you think there might be scope for him to actually get some opportunities for himself as well?
Absolutely. Based upon the Tour of Turkey, I reckon Andresen could definitely get his own opportunities. Like I was saying, there were quite a few stages where I was talking about those 1 to 2 kilometer climbs with you know, 4% on there and or 5%. If Jakobsen's in difficulty there, then I reckon they just swap immediately to Andreasen. I reckon that will be quite an open just agreement that, you know, if Fabio's struggling, you know, we don't have to wait. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing Andreasen on debut in a Grand Tour. I think he could definitely crack some top 10s for sure. Maybe a top 5 if he's lucky.
I mean, I was such a big fan of him. So, but we won't turn it into a Tobias Lund's Andreasen episode. I mean, you could turn this into a Max Pool episode. So we're both high on two people on the DSM. But in terms of Visma Liseberg, obviously they're the defending champions, but they're not exactly anyone's big favorites in terms of this. Okay, we're going to go on to Olav Koy. So you could turn this into an Olav Koy episode. But yeah, obviously Wout van Aert, as we spoke about, is not going here. They've changed him out for Christophe Laporte, Eduardo Affini in the team as well, Koen Bouwman, who won the blue jersey a few years ago, Robert Hessink, a veteran now, but he used to be a good GC rider in his day. Olav Koy, as I said, Jan Tratnik, obviously stage winner here before, Kian Alterbrooks, and Tila Valta, who's won the Malia Rosa before when he was riding for FDJ. Patrick, this team, I think Alterbrooks could maybe do a huge result there. It is quite an experienced team, and then you've got Olav Koy, who's been absolutely supersonic in some sprints this year. So, yeah, what does a good Giro look like for Visma Liseberg?
I think Alterbrooks' goal should be to win the white jersey. That would be a realistic goal to get because he's up against, you know, with Pogacar out of the picture now for the youth jersey, I reckon Alterbrooks has got a pretty good shot. And if he were to win that, he would...
Max Pool.
Max Pool. Oh, Max Pool, actually. Alterbrooks is fighting for second place in the white jersey competition. But in all seriousness, if Alterbrooks was competing for white jersey, he'd probably be fighting also de facto for a top five. So I think that Visma Liseberg's success here would be Alterbrooks finishing top five, plus probably a couple of stage wins as well for Olav Koy. Even though he doesn't have a big lead out in this race, I still think that he's good enough to serve the wheels and definitely pick up some victories along the way.
Yeah, especially with Laporte helping him. Yeah, moving on from Visma Liseberg, Movistar obviously have a former champion in their ranks. And as you correctly said in the other video, he actually won on debut, but it's not his debut anymore. But Nairo Quintana returning to the race for the first time in a while, backed up by Ruben Guerrero, Will Barter, David Cimolai, Fernando Gaviria, Lorenzo Mailesi, Aina Rubio, and Peleo Sanchez. I mean, this is a really interesting team when you look at each of the riders individually. Cimolai was really good when he was riding for Israel in the Giro. I think a couple of years ago, he had a number of top fives. Will Barter, good time trialist. Guerrero, obviously, we remember him winning a stage. And the blue jersey as well. Gaviria obviously has won the Maglia Ciclamino before here. He was absolutely red hot 1 year, and then we never saw that Gaviria really again. And then, yeah, I mean, Rubio was good last year, and we all know that Nairo's won pretty much every Grand Tour apart from the Tour de France, where he hasn't even won the yellow jersey one day. Sorry. But Sanchez was good as well. He got picked up from Burgos. He was really visible in the last week of the Vuelta a España, so a really good addition for the team. But yeah, that's my movie. I didn't even know I had this much love for Movistar, so surprise for me as well. But yeah, what is a realistic goal for them? Are they go? Because Nairo hasn't been great this year, and Guerrero, yeah, but not quite the super Guerrero that we thought he was going to transcend into.
I think it's kind of similar to last year, which is just largely stage hunting, but maybe trying to crack top 10 with somebody, whether that's Nairo or Rubio.
Yeah, who?
Yeah. I'd say more realistically Rubio. I mean, he won a stage last year and he finished 11th last year. So cracking a top 10 and just fighting for stage wins in the mountains with, yeah, like Barter, Guerrero and Rubio and maybe Peleo Sanchez, I reckon that's a fair goal. Just stage wins and then like low down top 10 in GC.
Yeah, we've given Movistar plenty of love on this episode. That's quite impressive. Outsiders, where are we looking towards? I mean, Hugh Carthy is here. EF Education Easy Post are sending a very EF Education Easy Post team with a bag of tricks. We'll have to see if any of it actually works. Are we still on the Hugh Carthy hype train? I still want him to I doubt we'll see him on the podium, but he could sneak into the top 10 once again.
Yeah, I think a top 10 is probably the goal. There's just been a bit of a rocky couple of seasons for Hugh Carthy, so just a bit of consistency, hit a top 10, that's probably the goal there. But I mean, other outsiders, Danny Martinez, I'd say he's an unknown quantity. We've never really seen him be just a pure leader, I don't think, in a grapple. We've seen him supporting Bernal and finishing inside the top 10 back in that 2021 Giro d'Italia. But being the pure leader himself is definitely unprecedented. So it'd be interesting to see how he goes, whether he can play his own trade and finish inside the top 10. How high are you for Martinez? Are you not feeling too confident?
I mean, he's my favorite Colombia rider, but I don't know. I feel like the team isn't strong enough to... He was great in the Vuelta Algarve, but I don't know. I don't feel it. I would love to see a podium for him. It's probably not out of the question when you look at the other riders, but it's just his team is not exactly dedicated to him. Sam Welterfoot, that's going to be annoying, having a sprinter sharing... Well, I'm not even sure he's sharing the team. I think he's just got the residual, like, who's there for mountain support for him? Shackman, Alayorti, is that it?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
So, yeah, that's not great. So, if he's there in, like, the front group and he needs a bottle, yeah, it's not happening.
Yeah, so maybe, yeah, if he needs to hand a rain cape or a gilet or anything to somebody, yeah, it's not going to happen, is it?
We have Julien Alaphilippe. We're not going to throw him. He's definitely not challenging for GC. Mike Woods as well is in this strange role, the puncher. He might be up there in a breakaway, so he's not really there. But Eddie Dunbar, he was one of the big stories last year, finishing inside the top 10. Again, another one of these shared teams. Caleb Ewan is there. Filippo Zana, who took a stage win as well. And then, yeah, DeMarchi... experience. Luke Plapp, we were talking about him. He was up there, was it last year in the UAE tour? So there is some potential in terms of GC, but yeah, what are you expecting out of Jake Ayula as a package? I mean, Caleb Ewan, maybe the change of team will help, will not, but it's a pretty strong sprinter field.
On the whole, it's a strong squad. It's got a good mix of guys who could finish inside the top 10 with Dunbar. If he can, he's had a lot of DNFs this year, but if he can turn that around and, you know, just do a good grand tour, that'll be really good. Plapp as well, kind of on debut, I guess, for the team in a grand tour. I don't know what to expect from him over a grand tour, because we've never really seen it before. So I'm more faithful that Dunbar's going to do something in that regard. But I think Filippo Zana's got a great shot finishing, you know, getting another mountain kind of breakaway stage. And then Caleb Ewan, yeah, like you say, like, he used to be one of the fastest sprinters in the world, and it hasn't really gone his way so far this year, but he's one of those where it wouldn't massively surprise me if he just kind of turned it on and he's just like the best sprinter in the race, because he's one of those kind of timeless sprinters where I think he does have the ability just to kind of really just be like, everybody's counted him out, and then he does really well just out of nowhere. So I'm not quite willing to write Caleb Ewan off just yet.
Is there anyone we've missed that we should have spoken about that you feel like, oh, well, okay. If people are screaming, the Italian sniper, we haven't mentioned his team, Damiano Caruso as well. Obviously, having finished on the podium of that Egan Bernal win as well. But the Italian sniper, he's been doing quite well. Antonio Tiberi. They have a strong team with a new boy, Torsten Train, who came over from Uno X. While Pools is always very strong. Remember, he took a stage in the Tour de France last year. But again, there's a sprinter. Phil Bauhaus is then and there. So, yeah. Where are the GC teams?
I don't get why everybody's hedging their bets a little bit with a sprinter, because we've now got this absolutely stacked sprinter field. And like, no offense to Phil Bauhaus, but there's just like so many good sprinters here. It's like the only one who isn't here is, well, Pedersen and Philipsen pretty much. But, you know, by the by, I think their GC team is actually pretty good, with Keplinger, with Tiberi, with Caruso, with Poles, with Torsten Tren. I think it's a really strong squad. I mean, Tiberi, the ethics of his pastimes to one side. You know, he was third in GC at Torrey Alps, and he did look really strong there. And he's only 22. He's going to be an interesting one to follow, I think, in this race, even if you don't like what his extracurricular activities. But yeah, I think Caruso, like you say, he's just, like I say, he's the Italian Terminator. He just keeps going. And he won't, like, he'll drop a little bit, but he'll always just kind of, like, keep on coming back. And, like, he finished fourth last year. And it's very easy to forget, but he is still quite a good GC rider. And, yeah, Paul's probably not for GC, but a good breakaway rider for sure. So I'm quite excited by the Bahrain Victorious team, actually. I think they've got quite a lot of scope to do some good results in this race.
I know people are going to be annoyed at me for not including Juan Pedro Lopez in this discussion, but we all know what happens with Tour of the Alps winners at the Giro. So it's a non-go zone here. Just ask Theo Gegenhardt from last year. Yeah, Patrick, we might as well focus on the Maglia Ciclamino now. We've mentioned the sprinters, some of them, but in terms of that all-round picture of going for it all out, Jonathan Milan winning it last year, he's here. Gaviria has won it in the past. There's plenty of strongmen here. Lawrence Piffy, even you were mentioning him. Caden Groves for Alps in De Koenig could be mounting another assault on this competition. But yeah, if he's kind of the front runners for you. Oh, Binyam Girmay even, he's returning to the race. And he famously left the race in wearing that jersey back in 2022.
Mm-hmm. I think my front runners, I've got four. I mean, you covered a few of them. Piffy, Binny, Jonathan Milan, and Olav Koy. I think those are the four names that I'm really looking at in this race, because you need to have that versatility in that first week to get over those little lumps and bumps. And I definitely think that all four of those riders have got the qualities for that. I'm just not certain about, like people are probably saying Tim Merlier, for example, but I don't have faith in his climbing. Very similarly, Fabio Jakobsen, I don't really have faith in his ability to climb. Groves has been just too off the boil for me this year. He just hasn't been hitting the mark, even if his whole team is pretty much designated around him. But, I mean, if you take a look at Groupama FDJ, that whole team, there doesn't seem to be a single climber in there. It seems completely focused around Piffy, which is incredible, I think, that a guy on debut so young seems to have an entire team built around him. But yeah, those four names that I mentioned at the start are really the ones which I'm looking at in terms of their versatility, but really being fast in a sprint finish. If I had to narrow it down a little bit more, I would really be focusing on Milan and Koy, because I think they've got the all-out speed. Like, I think they're a little bit faster in a flat sprint than Binny and Piffy, but they've also just got this surprising climbing ability for a real fast sprinter. So for me, it's between Milan and Koy.
Yeah, I think it's going to be quite an exciting one. But yeah, I mean, with all that out of the way, we might as well come to our favorite part of the show, and that is the predictions. This is going to be a long one, obviously, because it's a grand tour. But yeah, Patrick, which one do you want to start with?
Well, we'll finish with the Maglia Rosa. So let's start with the... let's start with Ciclamino.
That's the most least important one in your eyes.
I don't know. We've just talked about the sprinters, so look, we may as well just keep going.
I'm going to keep the faith, and I hope that Binyam Girmay comes back and wins it, so he puts the wrong right.
I'm just going to double down, like I've been saying. I'm going to go with Olav Koy. I have been prone to waver from my picks in the past, but I'm going to keep it true. I'm going to say Olav Koy, even though he doesn't have a big kind of lead out train around him. I think he's just been looking really good this year, so I think he'll win it. But I think it's going to be a real interesting competition. Perhaps one of the most interesting ones to watch throughout the race.
No, I'm counting on all the climbing, eliminating most of the contenders, and then he'll be the last one in Rome. But we might as well move on to the Maglia Azzurra, the blue jersey. Who won it last year?
Who did win it last year?
Was it one of the Procontinental teams?
Who won it last year? So it wasn't like Davide Bice or something like that. Or was it? No, Healy was contending for it. I remember that.
Oh, that's bad.
Who is it?
I remember now. Thibaut Pinot.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Gosh, I do remember that. I don't want to just pick like Pogačar. I want to keep it interesting with like a breakaway rider. And based upon his performance at Torrey Alps, I'm going to go with Simon Carr. Also, sorry, Simon Carr.
Okay, I think it's going to be someone dropping out of the GC race. I think Danny Martinez is going to win it.
Oh, that's a good shout, actually.
Yeah. He just lost my podium spot.
Oh, dear.
Young rider classification.
Oh, is it? See, this one's a little bit trickier. My allegiance to Max Puller is being tested right now, I must admit. Oh, you know what? Screw it. I'm gonna go for it. The Italian sniper is going to win the white jersey.
Who saw that coming?
Not
the cat.
The cat didn't see it. The cat. No. I'm not going to. No, he didn't see it coming.
Okay.
It's whatever.
I'm going to be boring. Alsbrooks went it.
So, see, that's the reasonable pick to be going with.
And for your podium for the 2024 Giro d'Italia, and we will all nail you to the wall after if it's wrong.
I'm going to go reverse order. Third place, Caruso. Second place, G. First place, Pogačar.
That was a boring one.
But realistic.
Yeah. I'm going to say... okay, I can't choose yours. We need to have one rogue. A rogue one. So
Caruso is rogue.
I'm going to say... Pogačar third.
What?
Something happened on one of the stages.
Obviously.
Bardet second. And the winner is, in his first ever Giro d'Italia, Alsbrooks. Gian Alsbrooks wins it for Visma Lisa Bike to defend the title for the Dutch outfit.
What are the odds for that?
I will find out.
if you said master podium, I reckon whatever Paddy Power will put it at about a million to one to happen.
Well, let's get some few euros on that. And for our special round, it's going to be where will Nairo Quintana finish, as he is a former winner of the race.
My word. 19.
DNF.
DNF. Wait, that's probably more realistic, to be fair.
Anyways, that's basically it for our preview show. And make sure to hit the like button, subscribe to the channel here. And if you haven't already, check out Patrick's own channel, I'll Do Cycling. He's going to do a preview himself as well. And we've got a few more things happening here on the channel as well with the Giro d'Italia. So a lot of exciting things still to come. And of course, as always, thank you very much for watching. And we will see you in the next one.